that whoever comes to the office who has the duplicate number, then we'll be able to look at that ID number and therefore take a decision whether we say that person retain that number and the second number to the license spot, and the person will then have to come forward and get the new ID number. Just to address that. But in other cases, we will write that bill up and give new ID numbers. It will depend on the cases when we deal with that. Remember, some of these duplicates are not mistake by home office. It is not duplicate. Because they received through fraudulent ways. So we are trying to deal with them. Those that are legal and those that are illegal. On the issue of the child born by an African, as long as that child is born by another African, whether the father or the mother, especially with this new announcement, that child will be a South African. But there are principles that will be followed, because we have observed that those children sometimes they don't qualify to get South African and identity. And therefore we want to make sure that everyone who comes forward, there are principles that will be followed and make sure that that child is qualified. There was also a same question in the context. When you look at the IT number, there are numbers there. And those numbers tell you, either you are a South African or you are not a South African. Out of the 30 numbers that you have, there is, if I'm not mistaken, it will reflect whether you are a South African or you are not a South African. But also it will reflect whether you are a female or a male. So those numbers are actually informing. Maybe when the committee invites us next time, we will try to bring in how the certificate is structured and those numbers, how to make it. Because the first 8 numbers is the base, and the others start to decide whether you're a citizen, you're not a citizen, you're male or you're female. So those are the numbers that tell us whether that person is a South African or not. The issue of perception of currently the matter is still in court. We're still dealing with it. Because there is the objective that really made us to take that position. I think the members are agreeing with us that in other provinces we don't have borders, because those provinces are in South Africa. They don't have the borders of the other. But we are requested to have a country. And also if you look at the number of people that are applying, one example, a person that is applying for asylum, how did this person move from base to data? It's a simple. And we are saying, if the person was in Beirut, that person, by entering something, would be able to go to the apply to everything. Can't filter them, that person would be legal in the country. But unfortunately, currently, we are faced with a situation where there are this is still in court, but still challenging the outcome of the court, and that's in court. But we would like to have order in how we deal with these issues. Because if you look at it, we have nearly 8 provinces with the perception officers. And therefore that becomes cumbersome for control and to manage. But I'm asking that, I think as members, we will get more information when that matter is dealt with. we are also looking at that issue. We have also a challenge with the people that we're getting these offices from, because they don't want us to have offices in the industrial areas, in the city, and so forth. They say it has an impact on their offices or their place of operation. So the whole question of demarcation of the offices is still also a challenge that we are facing. On the issue of how far, I think I have answered, and also on the issue of the certificate, I think I have answered. The issue of when necessary. Sometimes we find that the child comes to South Africa, and the parents, when they were on the way to come to South Africa, they then died on the way towards South Africa. Now, it becomes a necessity for whomever to provide that child, if only there is information that we have. Remember, ourselves in social development, we have a responsibility of making sure that that child is safe to their original birthplaces. So that is why when we say when necessary, we take into that consideration. Because if the parents have died whilst they are running away, who do you say the chances will take? Because the child is currently in South Africa and doesn't have parents. She or he doesn't have parents. On the issue of the certificate, we do have figures. Because our birth certificate has been given, so we will get that sent and share with the community. Maybe we need to make a commitment that we will send that information to the persons office to give the certificate. Because we also take into consideration the whole question of Millennium Development Goals. On the issue of maternal death, because that's why these figures also are to be cut. We promise. Chairperson, I think we have answered all the questions.
Only one, let one of the questions continue in terms of.
Here we gave the statistics. You remember that when we started the campaign, we were targeting a particular group. We knew that when it is after 14 years, those children will then be defined as late registration. And by that time, the act had not been amended, as I was indicating. Currently, it is amended. Anyone after 30 days, as per the act, is a late registration. So here, it was the objective of the campaign. The objective of the campaign was to eradicate late registration. And therefore, we're giving those figures. Otherwise, the campaigns that we are talking about are also targeting those children. We also follow the same procedure as per the late registration processes. Again, the figures that I have given was only up to 14, because at the age of 15 we have a campaign where we go to schools and get all the children that are completing 14 in preparation of them applying for a 19 at the age of 15. So 15 years, when they are about 15 years, we then allow them to make application, targeting their date of birth, knowing that by that date they would then have qualified to get their ID. So I think this is why it's up to 14. But when it is 15, we then go to school and get their application. But I can make an example. A child whom we have a campaign in October, and the child will be 16 in March, we can then take the application of that child, because in March we will be 16 in the hospital for that application. But also, just to make a point that we can provide those figures if the members want to see those pre-one pages. Thank you very much. I know that you would have wanted to engage more on this, but just suffice to say that, you know, where we need information, we would really want, I mean, if there was information that we did not have, or the questions were posed, we would really appreciate to have that information in writing. But otherwise, if you don't, we do need to know how to make the information. We will watch you with those follow-up. Unfortunately, we don't have time, and the Department of Education really, they've also requested to leave it at once. So can, I think we are trying to accommodate the different departments here, and I will then immediately hand over back to the Department of Education.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Going to go through the holistic strategy for planning framework for teacher education and development to point out that this particular strategy deals with the issue of demand and supply of teachers, but also looks at ways in which it can incentivize teachers to work in the rural areas and particularly in poor areas where we find that many teachers are not willing to go and teach in those areas. So we are also looking at that we're already incentivizing. In terms of our learning support material and textbooks, we have ensured that all children have access to adequate teaching and learning support materials, specifically workbooks and textbooks. I know with the Limpopo saga, there's an impression that there isn't, you know, that we haven't delivered on that, but to let you know that every child has a workbook for a specific subject. And a workbook is a day-by-day content that teachers are supposed to teach and learners are supposed to learn. So in this way, we're providing the kind of support that teachers and learners and parents need as well in terms of taking education forward. We've also improved our measure, put in measures to improve planning, coordination, management, and monitoring. And this we've done by standardizing and improving on the system to ensure that there's equitable funding across not just the national department, but across all provinces and districts. So not just in terms of horizontal coherence, we've ensured that we have vertical coherence in terms of districts and school clusters as well. The above mentioned measures have already started to yield positive results, and these are some of our successes. There has been a marked improvement in the pass rate of learners in grade 12, that is the National Senior Certificate Examination. The pass rate was alarmingly low in 2009, that is 60.6%. And in 2011, the pass rate reached 70% and climbed even higher in 2012 to almost 74%. So there's obviously progress in that area. The percentage of grade 12 learners that qualify for university entrance has also increased from 23.5% in 2010 to 26% in 2012. And this bodes very well for achieving the 2014 target of 175,000 learners who will be able to go to university. There's also been improvement in the performance of the 2012 annual results. In terms, as I said earlier, this is a diagnostic analysis that tells you where the problems are in terms of maths, science, and literacy. And these, ANA is written by grades 1 to grade 6 as well as grade 9. And using the ANA results, we can then employ and implement targeted interventions. In terms of human rights and civic education, the education system has a number of mechanisms in place to secure children's knowledge, often respect for their rights and the rights of others. These include, we have a dedicated social cohesion and equity education director within the department that promotes mainstreaming of human rights teaching and practice within the system. And as I pointed out earlier, we also work with social society as well as partners in business and as well as the media, and I'm sure some of you must have heard about the Bill of Responsibilities. That is the Department of Basic Education's way of trying to teach about the Bill of Rights, but to teach young people that rights come with corresponding responsibilities. We also have inclusion of human rights education in the curriculum, which includes issues of gender rights and children's rights, as well as issues around disability. The development, we have also developed an integrated strategy on HIV and AIDS from 2012 to 2016 to ensure a comprehensive and integrated response to HIV and AIDS throughout the education system. Something I don't have on this presentation, which Dr. September spoke about, was that we also have the integrated school health program that provides basic screening for young people so that we can deal with remedial measures at a very young age. Sometimes the child is not having a cognitive problem, but might just not be able to see the board properly and hence having problems. So there are screening processes that actually are able to identify some of the problems that young children have, and then to provide remedial we have a practical training, awareness training, and other interventions to address gender-based violence and barriers in school. You might have heard about our Stop Rape campaign. We have concerted effort to work with young people. We have the Girls Education Movement, the Boys Education Movement, which is run by peer educators and young people. Many times the children don't actually want to listen to adults when we talk about issues around HIV/AIDS, drug abuse, etc., and we use the GEMBEM Club as a vehicle to get young people to engage in social issues and to learn the correct behavior. We do training on human rights and constitutional values for school governing bodies and representative council of learners, because school governing bodies are the government's arm in schools, especially in terms of admission. Admission policy in terms of language of teaching and learning. So we have infused the whole values of the Constitution and the Bill of Rights into particular training programs for school governing bodies. And I brought a copy here for you all to have a look at some of the training manuals that we have for school governing bodies and learner literacy council. In terms of cultural and linguistic rights of children, that is Article 50, the Constitution recognizes and protects the rights of all people to participate in and practice their religion and culture. This means that no school policy or practice may exclude or otherwise discriminate against the students on the grounds of his or her religion or culture. The South African Schools Act provides that schools may observe religious practices subject to the proviso that it is done on an equitable basis and no person, whether it's a learner or a teacher, can be forced to participate. Again, that is also left to the school governing body in terms of ensuring that the rights of all learners are adhered to. We have a national policy on religion and education, which was published in 2003 to support schools in the development of constitutionally compliant religious practices and education at schools. And again, we target school governing bodies, principals, and learner representative councils in terms of educating the children around these rights. The state also recognizes that the right to use and be taught in one's own language is critical to maintaining the cultural integrity and right of equal access to education. And we have therefore promulgated particular policies. We have the language and education policy, and the national curriculum statement, which require learners to be taught in their own language in the foundation phase. This is important because in terms of language learning theory, the best way to ensure that learners will be able to learn their second language is that they must be proficient in their first language first. So that is why we have included this into the policy. More recently, the Education Laws Amendment Act 2011 strengthens the protection of the use of official languages for providing that governing bodies of a public school must ensure that there is no unfair discrimination in respect of any official languages. As long as there is a cohort of 30 to 35 learners who want to learn in their own language, it is incumbent upon the school governing body to ensure that those learners have those needs and rights actually respected. In terms of rest, play, leisure, recreation, and cultural and artistic activities, in terms of Article 31, Section 6.1e of the Children's Act recognizes that the child needs for the development and to engage in play and other recreational activities. And the department, together with the Department of Sports and Recreation, has developed a national pro-poor integrated school sports framework in 2011 with the objective of regulating access to and the delivery of school sports for all learners, irrespective of their ability, based on the principles of equity and access. the framework, looked at ways in which we can be creative and show that young people are able to engage in sports, not only to become professional, soccer players or tennis players, but also just to be able to have fun and to enjoy the competitive spirit and team spirit as well. The DBE has also published a draft school sport policy, which is an enabling framework for the implementation of school sports. This initiative has received the highest priority within the Department of Sports and Recreation, which has increased its budget from 27.3 million to 42.6 million in 2012. In conclusion, the department has developed the action plan to 2014 towards the realization of schooling 2025. This plan is aimed at realizing the rights of children and to improve the quality of education. The basic education sector is also working collaboratively with other government departments such as the Department of Women, Children and People with Disabilities, Social Development, etc., to ensure that the rights of children are realized in South Africa. Furthermore, the department has close working relationships with international development agencies such as UNICEF and UNESCO in protecting the rights of children. Thank you.
Thank you very much, and once more we apologize for the time for the frame. Just before I leave to my members, I just want to know the difference between the DCD that are run by social development and those that are run by the Department of Education. And okay, let me hand over to members. Member Peterson, Member Chicago, Member Tweke, Member Murray, and Member Ekana. In that order, please.
Thank you, Chair. And thank you very much for the presentation you just gave. My concern is on disability. Why I say in Normandy, in the manner in which the Department of Women, Children and People with Disabilities report on access to education for children with disabilities. If a draft initial report, country report on the United Nations Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities report the amount of children with disabilities of school going age and they are not in school, why isn't this draft report not mentioning this? It is important to mention both the amount of children with disabilities who are currently attending school and the amount of children who are not. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Dr. I'll first start with the disabled schools that we have got quite a lot in the Northwest province. And I don't know whether today they're not well looked after or they're not maintained. Can I ask why are they not treated? You know, the teachers are complaining, they ask for private donors and the food plan school. That's what I'd like to know. And then last year there was a test taken. I don't know whether it's in the learners were given a test in the lower primary school. And they were all disqualified. I don't know whether it was in the right thing. There was a test taken in. Can you tell me what was the cause of the failure? And then the private schools. Is there any intervention between the department and the private school? Like for instance, if my child is in the private school, is there anything that connects you and the private school? The other question is that the percentage, of the persons mentioned in your presentation. Is it a quantity percentage or is it a quality percentage? Because there's a lot of complaints that the percentage the dilemma they are suffering, but it's not quality education that this can render. Thank you.
Thank you, Jensen, and thanks for your presentation. My first question is that I just wanted to check what plans does the department have with regards to the huge amount of corporal punishment in our schools, despite it being abolished or not. Yes, the draft CRC report that we have mentioned that over 2 million children, both girls and boys, suffering from corporal punishment. And secondly, you, in terms of play or leisure, you indicated that the Department of Basic Education also published a draft school sports policy. I'm not quite sure how far I'm with regards to the finalization of this policy, because it has been presented, I think, 2 years back or 3 years back, this draft policy, but until today it's still in a draft form. It seems as if we don't have the desire to implement it. Because what you are saying is that school sports is safe. Altogether, school sports is safe. You know, you can see athletics around central Maryland, but after that, everything is gone. It seems as if both departments, either sports or education, are not even in interest or in the trend. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you, Chairman.
Thank you, Chairman. I'll still go back to that question from Monica that said, how do you treat refugee children? Remember they said you guys need some training or something, but I would be interested to know what is the status. And then the training of educational, what is the progress, what is the implication, how far are you the ECD centers where they used to work or somewhere else, what is the progress? I find it very, that we conduct from ANA, or the record, at the same time, it was 50% of the children to sense. Because then if you say somebody, the person is 50%, and I'm asking them, I'm not sure what is the, what would be your range of assessment in terms of, I think, to get data of 100 is a pass. You know, when you do assessment, there's a person like 50% or 80% of the total of what I'm asking them on. Because for me, it's still poor quality of understanding. And then I just want to share with you scenario in my family. My 8-year-old went to, one of the English, blah, blah, blah. My sister's unemployed, so two kids, one is a college crash, the English is not a crash. And then the other one is doing grade 2. In a public school, in a non-public school, and then she is not doing English, she's only doing English. The one at CRECH can express herself and say, I am a graduate, when I grow up I want to be a pilot, she'll go on and on, and she also understands what she's saying in our vernacular in Kipu. And, the reason why I'm talking about this is the issue of when you spoke to the amendment of the law, I know it's a law, but, every time around, I think in the past we used to do SUTU, your vernacular English and African simultaneous name. For me, that makes sense because if one teacher says, this is a tree, the other will come, what's a tree in African? Boom. He hears us a boom or, and then my vernacular will say, this is badly, So you grow up knowing, the three different languages, whatever language you might agree on in province. This is my own, I know because the law is there, but maybe to say that this has been done before we, came up with this law that said up until grade 3 then they can start English. Because grade 2, somebody, because she's the eldest of the three, she can't express herself in English. She's been saying those things in vernacular, and these two young ones are laughing at her to say you can't express.
And the worst part is that the very threat is the fear that in the same school. So when they get to grade one, like they forget about English or, you know, it's like they regress. So for me, I don't know, maybe it's another debate for some time, but because I just think about it, I think the other way we did it was better in terms of doing, you know, the three language or two language, whatever that you decide the province to say, maybe it wasn't like that, it will be student English, and then something, I'm not sure what to do. But other people should have needed to deal with it. So I'm just sharing that with you to say, it worries me every day, the 30% and the issue of language. Honestly, I'm not sure whether we're having a problem in terms of the best interest of education in terms of our children, you know. Because we can do all other things, we can succeed everything, but education is the key. Without that, our kids are doomed in terms of the future. And then the future leaders and present and all that. I think the issue of proper punishment is covered. Thank you, Chair.
I get the debate on the issue of the language. You see, for a lot of people, I think other countries find it easy because those developed countries, Europe, United States, even the Asian tigers, Malaysia, Singapore, they have disadvantages that there's only one language there, which is the language mother tongue at school for skills, but also in industry, because those people own their own industries. In Africa, the problem is this separation that somebody else, foreign in many cases, is owning the industry, and our education system has to be indigenous because they say people learn best in their mother tongue. Now, this is the problem. Really, in South Africa, it's those that can afford take their children to learn from basic education, from primary, in modern schools, because they want them to pick up on English very early in life. I mean, in South Africa, it's that, at best, for example, that the high failure rate for black students is because they are struggling with English. Now that is why all of us, we can afford to send our children to modern school or private school, because they want them to pick up on the English very early in life. Now if you say to us, look, children can learn math and science by saying mother tongue at an early age, even when they convert to English later, that is fine because they've already had any Latin mother tongue. That becomes difficult. Really, in South Africa, parents who can afford just send their children from primary to learn in English because they believe they'll pick up any and as a result perform better at tertiary. I mean, those contradictions, how do you think we are ultimately going to sort out? The big problem is that industry or the job opportunities are in English, because it's not indigenous people who own the economy.
Members, I think we can grab lunch and have other ones that are going to have lunch. Once I allow other members to be to put you, can grab lunch and come back.
I've got just one question for the one. She made mention of a peer education, the education movement that are being established. Are they already established and why are they established? And please not forget the rural areas when these things are established. Thank you.
And the very last one, how does the Department of Basic Education plan to ensure the full implementation of white health emphasis on inclusive education, which is not mentioned in the CRC?
So they want to you.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. There are several questions and some of them overlap. I'm going to start with the question on the issue of language and the policy that deals with the language of teaching.
Can I come in there? You know what? I don't think this is going to be practical. Can we agree that we put that in writing? All those questions that we have in your post now. And then, because I don't think we're going to make it, we've got only 50 minutes left on our side before we engage with the next department. Can we agree on that, please? Let us welcome, thank you very much for, you know, for the report, and then we would love to engage next on this, but unfortunately, time has not allowed us. Thank you very much. Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, Honorable Members. We will break for 15 minutes lunch. Please, ask those questions. Tomorrow, we will be 1 minute.